Welcome to Cybersecurity Growth, a show for aspiring and existing cybersecurity leaders. I'm your co-host, Sean Valley, Managing Director and CISO of Cybersecurity Growth. I'm also a musician here on Twitch and elsewhere under the name Music by SV, but more on that later. And hello to my co-host, Garrett Gross. Welcome back, Garrett.
Well, hey there, Sean Valley. How are you?
I'm having a wonderful Friday. Some people would call it a good Friday. I believe I'm having a wonderful Friday. Oh, that is so stupid. Anyways, how are you?
I'm doing great. Really looking forward to the weekend. Looking forward to this show, honestly. I think last time we had a blast. Discuss some really good topics. It's always good to chat with you. So feeling great.
Yeah, it is. It's pouring rain. It's like pouring buckets of rain in my neighborhood. And it's been like this for like 2 days. So it's like everybody I talk to in this area is like glum, gray, blah.
But and you're still living in a redacted township.
Redacted.
Right?
Yep. The town of Redaction. That's my home.
It's very nice here in. Nowheresville.
Yes, on Nowheresville. Yes, it is. All right. Welcome to episode number 14, FBI 2023 Internet Crime Report. Before we get started, I want to shout out some new folks who we've seen follow on the Twitch and on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Since the last time we got together 2 weeks ago. Speaking of redacted, we have an unknown user who followed us on Twitch. So I love that. It's kind of like, ooh, redacted name, or more likely, or more likely some bot that got kicked off of Twitch. Also want to welcome Tide B2. Want to welcome the Dutch Angles. We want to welcome Rico Sima. Thank you for that follow. And King Kong MC5. I like that name a lot.
Love that.
Eddie Kiki. Oh, no, Eddie Kiyi. Kiyi. All right. I'm working on the spelling here. It's K-I-Y-I. Welcome, Eddie. And then Texaradon.
I know who that is.
I don't know how to say the username.
That's a portmanteau of Texan and Coloradan.
I know it, but I don't know how to say it.
I bet they're listening right now.
Oh my goodness. Well, hey, welcome to all our new Twitch followers. Lovely to have you all here. While we're doing that, we've had some followers over on YouTube as well, and I love that. So I'll just shout out a couple folks here without doxing people. I'm not a big fan of doxing people because YouTube sometimes gets a little bit more personal than Twitch. But thank you to Catherine, Sebastian, Ariel, Ronald, and Tiago for following us or subscribing, I should say, over on the YouTube over the last couple of weeks. We very much appreciate seeing you here and tell your friends.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll get into our show and our rundown in just a moment here. Where we have a handful of topics that we generally cover. But before we do that, I like to start every single show as if we are superstars walking on the red carpet of some famous award show.
Oh, no.
And ask ourselves, who are you wearing today? So I'm going to pass this over to Garrett to get us started today. Garrett, who are you wearing today?
Well, I forgot that we were doing this, but fortunately, I will be able to deliver. I mean, it's not a vendor, but I am wearing a DCP shirt.
Tell me more. I don't know what that is.
Okay, so this is DEF CON parties.
This really shows the difference between you and me, who's real and who's a poser. Okay, let's go.
I'm the ultimate noob poser at all times. So this is a buddy of mine guy that I know started trolling, you know, all the vendor forums and communiques and LinkedIn pages for all the party invites that are sent out during DEF CON, and just puts them out there for everyone to sign up. So DEF CON parties is a way to just, and it's usually parties during Black Hat, to be quite honest, but if you go to defconparties.com, just give them a little plug here, you go out and you can see all the parties that are schedule for the vendors. And it's always fun to see like that pocket of like actual hackers at the very, very businessy vendor parties. It's pretty funny.
I've been to that site. Maybe you showed me about, because I know going to that site's like, oh, it's so easy when I'm in Las Vegas, be like, where are all the things to do at night? And like,
That's
check,
right.
check, 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 hit all those invite buttons and all of that. So
I mean, you know, if properly planned, you can eat and drink for free during Black Hat and DEF
that whole
CON.
week. And if you somehow work for the government and are on our per diem, you know, you not only could you eat and drink for free at vendors, but you can take that per diem and, you know, be a degenerate for a week.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, nobody does. Nobody does. Well, thank you for sharing who you're wearing today.
Well,
Garrett.
Sean, let's just pass the mic over to you. And cool. Who are you wearing?
Well, today, a little chilly in my neighborhood, so I've gone full sleeve. But I thought this was good. Just brand new. First time on. It does say New Balance up here. But more importantly, over on the side, it's a really small logo.
I know that logo.
But it says GuidePoint Security. And so why am I wearing GuidePoint Security today? It just so happens last week there was a GPSecCon in my neighborhood, GuidePoint Security Conference in my neighborhood, and I signed up and attended. And I think what's really interesting is I have historically been a person who goes to a fair amount of conferences around these United States. The last conference I had been to prior to this was RSA at the end of February, the beginning of March 2020. And I have not been to another since. I was thinking about this. I'm like, I stopped. All of a sudden, COVID hit and I just haven't been back. So somebody encouraged me to go to GuidePoint Security Conference in my area. And I'll say, well, it was nice to be back. It was kind of neat to be walking around and somebody say, hey, Sean. And like, oh, it's an old friend, old coworker. And
I love that.
It was a good get together. And actually they had, you know, a lot, there was a bunch of vendors there, not a huge, huge crowd, but, you know, a fair amount of vendors, probably 400 or 500 people. And a few interesting talks that I actually thought were kind of worth going to, as well as most importantly, catching up with folks that I haven't seen in a while.
A lot of good folks over at GuidePoint. Yeah. I'm sad to report that I'll be breaking a very long streak and will not be attending RSA this year due to some wrinkles.
Well, you know what's interesting? When is RSA? I've got a comment after you say when it is. It's very, very soon, right? Like,
yeah,
in a week or two?
No, it's at the beginning of May.
Okay, all right. I had heard someone just mention the RSA conference just yesterday, and I thought to myself, wait a second. That's going to be like this week or next week. And it's not even on my radar this year for whatever reason. Again, the whole COVID thing broke my mindset of going to conferences. I used to have like a whole, you know, a coat hook with all, you know, 20 years worth of conferences. And during COVID, I'm like, I'm going to clean. I don't need this stuff. And I tossed them. It was the weirdest, like, it was like this weird, like, religious event of like, okay, we're moving on. And yeah, I'm looking at the hook right now. They're not here anymore.
I think a fun section for next episode might be like, show us all your DEF CON and, you know, other conference badges and stuff.
It'll have to be you. It'll stories. Have to be all you, because mine all got pitched when I cleaned this room. They're gone.
They don't exist
anymore.
No, oh boy.
Like,
okay.
Didn't like throw them in a box for later. I threw them in a barrel and.
Well, much to my family's chagrin, I still have mine, and they're grotesque and obscene, and they're only allowed in my office. So,
all right, let's get to the rundown for this week.
Let's do it.
Okay, so for those paying attention at home, we basically have a few sections that we go through in the new format that we started the last time we got together 2 weeks ago. We have a section called Nerd Zone, where we're talking a little bit about interesting news or just interesting tech and or cyber type topics that either of us want to bring to the discussion. We've got a section called Hot Topic, which that is our key topic of the week. We already talked about that in the title of the show. We'll get back to that. We have a section called War Stories, where if either of us feel like we want to talk about some type of battle that we were in our life in the cybers, we can bring that up. I think we both might have a topic on that. We have a section called Let's Be Humans, where maybe we'll get out of this. Let's get out of the cybersecurity space and talk about other things that interest us in life. And then before we wrap up, we will get into the job market, which is a new area that Garrett brought to us last time. And we'll reintroduce this and talk a little bit about it and see how we can grow the section. So there's our rundown.
Awesome.
So back to the top, Nerd Zone. I think we both brought something interesting here. Garrett, do you want to get us started on what's interesting in your world as far as Nerd Zone goes this week?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, in the Nerd Zone, we want to talk about topics that are obviously close to security, but also very contemporary. So I was in a bit of a shock. I looked up, you know, some of the recent breaches to discuss, and I was appalled to see that there were so many to choose from. I mean, it wasn't a good feeling when I saw, you know, 200 stories reported within the last 24 hours reported to data breaches. But what I found, in addition to just every single layer of the economy seems to be hit, from the national level, very large corporations, government entities, all the way down to like very small, you know, community and regional hospitals. So I'll get into the specifics of a couple here, but like, you know, it really begs the question, are we having much of an effect in security? Because we recognize very marginal success, very incremental successes in our day-to-day jobs. I mean, that's kind of what we're programmed to do, is to lay out what risk looks like and then develop a plan to just reduce it over time. But I mean, I'm just seeing so much activity out there. It's like, how can we even keep up? And in a topic maybe related to later on the show, any claims about, you know, no jobs in cyber? Like I call foul, because there's so much work to do. So either the awareness is not there, which I don't think that's the case, or there's still just a kind of a weird temperance on budget spend in regards to security. It's more of a reflexive thing rather than a proactive approach. So getting off my diatribe and soapbox, I'll talk about, Sean, do you remember the AT&T breach back in 2021? Some threat actors had reported on forums that AT&T had been breached, and they're trying to sell a large amount of information. And then no one responded to that. You know, AT&T said that their official statement was, "This does not appear to have come from our systems," which sounds like a very legalese, culpability type statement there. But what's interesting is that several analysts took a look at this, and one in particular, Troy Hunt, did a thorough analysis. And I mean, this guy definitely knows what he's talking about. You can check his creds. 100% confirms that this is real data. So whether or not it came from AT&T's systems, I mean, we know that AT&T tends to share their systems with a couple of other entities out there.
Yeah, I believe AT&T likes to have their systems in certain closets that other, maybe, you know, folks may be able to tap into those closets and borrow some data, maybe.
It's a very, very famous closet located in New York that we won't talk about. They're everywhere, by the way, just FYI. But anyway, back to the point, real data, definitely real identities. So this impact could still be terrifying, because here's the thing. I guess ransomware actors the threat actors gave up and they just leaked it. They just said, okay, no one's paying. Well, here it is for everyone. So just rest assured that if you're an AT&T customer, your information is now in the hands of, you know, thousands of internet randos at this point. What I found was really interesting in Troy Hunt's analysis is one thing that he said in response to AT&T's statement of, "This does not appear to have come from our systems," was beautiful. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. I found that very poignant and very appropriate for this.
Which aligns with what AT&T said in their initial response. Doesn't appear.
That's exactly correct. Which again, you know, everyone wants to, you know, call foul on the very large vendors. But I mean, AT&T is one of the largest. I mean, they're a huge, huge corporation. So I would imagine they have, you know, tons to lose. And, you know, that statement was likely carefully constructed. So yeah. Whether or not it actually came from them, I don't know, but it's definitely AT&T data. It's out there. So for anyone who is an AT&T customer, definitely be on the lookout for any kind of weird contacts, anything to do with your AT&T account. I would just probably treat that with a little extra scrutiny.
Yeah. I know, if you think about it, maybe you're not currently an AT&T customer.
But what if you have been?
But were you at one point? Like, and I know a lot of people who can say, oh, yeah, that's a good point. I'm not currently, but I definitely was 5, 10, 20 years ago. And what, you know, what data of mine is now out there?
And keep in mind, identity theft comes in all striations. I mean, you can have your life completely ruined, or like me, you can have someone open a cable TV account in California and that follows you on your credit report for years. And it's just like, you know, the most annoying thing ever. So definitely don't disregard that. Much to Sean's point, if you are an AT&T customer or have been, I'm just, you know, be on the lookout a little bit.
That's an interesting, it's interesting because when we both write our nerd zone topics down, we don't discuss them ahead of time. We just kind of put down what we're seeing, what's, you know, what's getting at our, you know, bothering us, right? That we want to talk about and what's current and what we think might, you know, folks might want to hear about. And I think about the nerd zone topic that I brought up and I titled it, How Can We Still Trust Microsoft? That's my title. And, you know, I think everybody who listens or watches the show has been a longtime Microsoft user customer in one way or many ways, right?
Yep.
But thinking of late, and I don't think there's anybody who's going to listen to this or hear this and not think about Microsoft in the news from a security incident perspective over the last, we can just say month, we can say months, and we can say years. And you know, this is me thinking about, how can we still trust this company who is constantly identifying security incidents and data breaches that are occurring on their developed systems that are on their watch, right? I'm not talking about me and my little mom and pop shop using Microsoft Word on Windows. I'm talking about Microsoft, the company that makes the stuff, and the company that became a SaaS product company over the last 10 years and is eating everybody's lunch, selling lots of SaaS software and security software, getting popped on a regular basis, and then also not being very, you know, forthcoming, right? That's there's a big piece of it. Like when you mentioned AT&T, you know, Microsoft got popped end of last year. Some baddies got into their internal Outlook, their internal Microsoft Exchange system. You know, most of us have all heard about this and come to find out it looks like it's a Russian state-sponsored group that got in. And Microsoft kind of said, yeah, you know, a few high-level execs had their inboxes read, but don't worry, no intellectual property, no sensitive data was leaked. I'm like, give me a break.
I find that hard
to name anybody whose inbox is not littered with sensitive intellectual property. Just name some. And then the fact if these are, you know, executives, obviously there's lots that leaked, but you know, so they're
financial data on their employees. I mean, my God, like everyone has potentially sensitive data. And again, this might be a question of semantics. You know, what is sensitive as per Microsoft?
And you know, so we heard about that story. That was November, I believe, that occurred. And now in the last couple of weeks, we come to find out it's now taken another turn and Microsoft starting to come a little bit more open to find out, oops, while they were here, you know, they took some source code. And, you know, so now some of our product source code has been, you know, taken by this group to do whatever they wish to do. And so I don't plan to kind of like go through all of the details here, but it just goes back to that question. How can we still trust Microsoft? They don't know how to secure their own Microsoft 365 environment. They don't know how to secure their own Azure AD. Now it's called Entra ID environments. And by the way, no, if they can't do it, the experts who built this stuff and are operating this stuff behind the scenes, then how can anyone else do it, right? So here's my problem of like, how can we not only just trust Microsoft as a SaaS, you know, the service backend company, but if they can't figure out how to protect the systems they build, how can any of us figure out how to, you know, flip the right switches to get us into a secure state?
Well, and the way that we should be thinking about this in security is not, you know, what are the ramifications of someone getting access to Outlook or someone getting access to Azure or someone getting it's whatever. It's the fact that Microsoft and these other corporations are so large that the ability to tie pieces together between different breaches is exponential, because I highly doubt that there is any kind of, you know, orchestration between the different business units to make sure that they don't have interdependent vulnerabilities.
Again,
that whole trust, you know, verify thing, that can be easily overcome with, again, access to an executive's inbox. We see theft involving millions of data or millions of dollars worth of IP accomplished by getting into an organization's Slack and saying, hey, I forgot my phone at a party last night. Can you give me an MFA token to access the production infrastructure? It happens all the time. And I would say there's a higher proclivity in large organizations like that.
Yeah. And I'm not saying any other company is doing a better job. I'm not saying other software companies are. I'm not saying other security companies are doing a better job. I mean, do you have a retort?
Oh yeah. So I read this morning. Facebook is in trouble.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you remember this, they had like a streaming service that was in direct competition with Netflix. and something, and you can read the source on this. I swear I'm not making it up, but some agreement between Facebook and a couple of other providers like Netflix, Spotify, allowed them to read private messages from users. They just
Oh.
had access to all your DMs. Now, just imagine that. Again, Sean, no one cares about me and my affinity for cat videos and how many cat videos I send out. No one cares about that. But those of us, we'll say those of you who've had experience dealing with data at a very large scale, understand that the ability to correlate data, that type of data, the exposure there is un. I mean, we don't have a way to understand that. So my point is, if vendors are willingly allowing other vendors access to extremely private data with no care, how can we expect anyone else to do the same? Like you said, no one else out there is doing it better. So again, where's the bar?
Well,
Where's the
hearing that, it
line?
reminds, I mean, you're taking me back to the Cambridge Analytica
That's
issues
right.
of Facebook, right?
Right.
2016 US election days, right? A company who had access to a lot of API stuff and was able to actually get into the DMs and other things as well. So it kind of sounds like a repeat story with
Possibly.
a different tech. But yeah, back to, I mean, thinking about the AT&T story, thinking about the Microsoft story, now this Facebook story. I'm not saying others are doing it better. I'm not, I'm not saying they're not either. I'm just highlighting like these are enormous organizations that we are all trusting, and why don't we just say we as a collective whole are constantly failing here. And this kind of goes back to, I think, your initial talk about, breaches everywhere.
Yeah, well, but what's the recourse? Like, how is AT&T going to be penalized for this? How is Meta going to be penalized for this? They're not.
No.
There's no punishment that could be levied that will have any impact on that. I mean, I'm being very grandiose in general, but like, I can't understand what sanctions could be imposed on them
Yeah, if you
to.
think about it financially, is the market share still growing? I mean, we know Microsoft is doing some of the best it's ever done, ever in its
That's right.
existence.
That's right.
Their stock is still just, it is doing
Soaring.
very, very well, right? There were years where Microsoft stock was just blah. It is doing extremely well. So, people are speaking with their dollars and not walking away because of these. They're still contributing to it because, they feel like they need to. Yeah, I think this is super interesting, and I think we had a long ways to go here. And it's so interesting. We've spent so many years, created so much tech to protect and defend, yet here we are having these conversations week after week.
Well, I mean, it's the same story every time. Every
It
time you hear some modification of how convenient something is going to be in regards to your information, I just think about the security implications of, great, well, what have we given up to make that happen? And
That's crazy. All right. I think I've covered my nerd zone. Do you have anything else you wanted to touch base on this week?
now let's move on to that crime report. I'm
All
really
right.
interested in discussing this with you.
All right, everybody. Welcome to our hot topic of the week. The hot topic of the week is something known as
Directly related to what we're talking
it
about.
really is. It's the Federal Bureau of Investigation Internet Crime Report from 2023. That's what it's dated. But just note, I think this report actually just came out in February. It's all based off of 2023 data, but it's a brand new report. So if you want to find the report yourself, just go out to ic3.gov to get yourself the PDF, and you can read through the 40 or so page report. I got my hands on it a couple weeks ago, been reading through it, having conversations with folks, and I pseudo summarized it, but I kind of pseudo summarized it on areas that I thought really kind of stuck out to me and folks that I have lots of conversations with. So I'm going to read through some of the summary. Garrett, chime in and let's have some conversation. So the FBI 2023 crime report pointed out a significant increase in phishing and ransomware attacks impacting businesses nationwide. No surprise.
Spreads.
Phishing saw a considerable surge, reflecting a growth of about 23% in incidents compared to 2022. These scams targeted businesses by posing as trustworthy organizations to trigger responses or gather sensitive data like bank and credit card details. The lack of employee awareness and low-level IT security measures were cited as primary reasons for the widespread reach of these attacks. All right, I'll take a breath. Thoughts on that intro?
It just kills me because awareness, education, I can't tell you how many vendors out there downplay the importance in lieu of their technology. It blows me away. Just a little awareness and constant curation that everyone is aware of what a phishing message is, how to spot it, how to look at the actual email address that it's coming from, look into the links, hover over before you click, like stuff like that. Very basic things are proven to avoid this type of behavior. Yet this report tells us that most of us are not engaging in this education at all,
Yeah.
which to me is the cheapest form of extremely effective security control that you can have out there.
I think there's a couple things just from the starting point, right? The FBI is creating a report. It's not like this is coming from Mandiant or CrowdStrike or some of our key players, coming from the FBI. So I think there's a couple things to hear, and I ask our audience, are you connected with your local FBI organization, your local FBI cyber office? And I say that because there's a couple things that for cybersecurity leaders to think about. Like, in your area, do you have a local InfraGuard group? And if you're not familiar with what it is, InfraGuard is basically a meetup group. It's a group that meets up from time to time, mixture of public folks, private sector folks, meeting, having almost like a little conference, like a tiny little conference, and they meet up from a regular basis. And it's something you need to apply for, and people kind of do a little background check to make sure those who join are good citizens who could quote unquote pass some type of federal test. But that's the number one question. Are you a member of your local InfraGuard? I have been for like 10 years. I'm not
I
saying it's the
am.
greatest thing, but I find it important to stay connected, as I have worked in both public sector and private sector, and it's so important to share information and learn from others. At the same time, are you tied into your local FBI cyber unit? So in all major cities, you just gotta find it. In all major cities, there's a nearby FBI cyber unit. And if you're not, as a cybersecurity leader, if you don't have the phone number, the mobile number and desk number of your local FBI cyber agent, put that on your to-do list.
I'll say another benefit of this is even if you're not planning on being active in the, public private sharing information community, after you're vetted, after you become, part of this kind of cloister crowd, you do get advanced warnings on stuff, which is nice. You'll get a little advanced communiques on things that are, just coming over the horizon, which is nice, especially if you're in a operational capacity. You can start to bolster your defenses a little earlier than some. And all it requires is a submission, a little background check, nothing that no one hasn't gone through before. But I've seen it paying dividends in just being a passive consumer of this information.
Yeah, sometimes it even just makes sense. Pick up the phone, have a check-in with your local cyber agent. Say, hey, what are you seeing out in industry? And again, just have that connection, because if and when you have that big event, you know that you have those folks out there. They're one of the several folks that might be in your contact list. So you say, oh, I should reach out to them, let them know we're dealing with this major issue, and they may say, oh, we're seeing this in a couple different places. Here are a couple things that might be helpful for you.
And I don't think that most folks, Sean, understand that those are resources available to you, to the public, as I mean, they may not be able to meet with you right at that moment, but like that is a resource that you should definitely use. It's a publicly available resource.
Publicly available. So for people who are like, huh, what? Dude, it's free.
It's free.
There's some free cyber defense out there, in a sense,
That's
right?
right.
There is some free cyber support out there. That's a nice way to look at it. Okay, thinking about phishing being a top story yet again in another report, let's ask ourselves, what are we doing about phishing, emails? Do you have something in place that you're testing, your internal users to educate them on phishing? I struggle with this one I continue to struggle with the existence of phishing testing. We need to help educate folks, because unfortunately, phishing emails are making their way into inboxes and tricking people into going out to, fake Microsoft login sites or fake Okta
All the
login
time.
sites, and type in your username and password, and boom, blammo, bad things start to happen. But my problem with, phishing testing, it's like, okay, nobody likes the information security team to begin with. Nobody wants, nobody wants them here. Nobody wants to work with them, because they're the department of no. They're the department that's making user experience less in organizations, mm-hmm. and now you're trying to catch me in a trap. Now you're trying to catch me in a trap. So I struggle with this.
You're telling me I can't run Minecraft on my work computer? How dare you?
I feel like you've seen this before. I feel like you've seen this movie before. Oh, my goodness. So, you know, phishing training, I still believe it is important, but I struggle with it. What are we doing for tooling? I look back to us, the technologists in this space, right? We're just talking about technology companies. What are we doing to solve this, right? If bad people can drum up really nice looking phishing emails, thanks to like ChatGPT for, you know, if English is a second language and you're trying to get to a English speaking user base first, now ChatGPT is going to get that beautifully crafted email for you for the bad guy. What tools are we putting in place? Are we, you know, seeing these spoofed email addresses and stopping them before they come into our inboxes? Are we using a tool that's checking links that are embedded in emails, so we continue to remind our users, don't forget to mouse over your links, right, before you click on them and see that, oh, it's not Microsoft.com, it's 2344.something.com, right? You know.
Well, there are solutions out there that will do all of this for you, but they're exorbitantly expensive. And as I've spoken about in the past, you know, I've worked for organizations that either could not afford those solutions, or we had way bigger fish to email security analysis, you know, MFA or single sign-on or those things. I would wager that there are a lot of great tools out there that'll just do phishing simulation. I've been a customer of a few. I've worked for a company that did phishing simulation. And I would say that, you know, there's, other than keeping the information current, there's really not much you can do to improve that in my eyes. I think the real onus is on the person running the security to get to educating your users about this. You can't do this once a year and check the box and say, okay, great, we did our phishing training for the year. I mean, you have to work at it. And I think that's probably why those phishing suites have gone gained some popularity, is because, you know, they do provide some of that curation of that. You failed the phishing simulation, so now I'm going to put you through mandatory training. But even then, I worry about any kind of set it and forget it approach, because you're removing that human element from it. And unfortunately, I think it needs to be someone's job to run phishing simulation and to curate that. And very few organizations have that in the budget, unfortunately.
Yeah, good point. All right, I'm going to move on to the next section here from the summary. Ransomware also emerged as a significant threat, where cyber criminals lock users out of their systems or data, demanding ransom in return for regained access. The report mentions an increase of 32% in these incidents, causing significant disruption to business operations. Almost 60% of these incidents targeted small to medium-sized businesses. Garrett,
that
thoughts?
Should surprise no one. No. Ransomware, you don't even have to be able to write ransomware these days. You just go buy ransomware off, you know, the dark web.
Yeah, and as I ask, you know, people ask me, what should I do about ransomware, right? You know, this question comes up for folks who are kind of, you know, building your organization. I say, remember, get the foundations in place. You know, do you have endpoint security tools on your endpoints? Because if you've got a modern day endpoint security tool, they are being regularly updated to look for signatures, look for heuristics, looking for the likelihood of something that may get as a ransomware dropper. You know, that's important. Do you have something or someone monitoring your environments 24/7? So if they see that anomalous behavior or unique behavior, that they can quickly respond. So maybe ransomware makes its way into your environment and starts to do bad things. Do you have folks who are there to stop the bad things? Which oftentimes bad things happen when we're asleep, when we're on vacation, when we're on holiday. So having someone there to make sure that there is no downtime, no vacation time, no holiday, to be able to respond quickly. You know, those are the things I'll tell folks who are saying, what do I do about ransomware?
Well, and even if you have some kind of automated intervention, like we notice, you know, shadow copies are being made in the file system and you lock the machine down, make sure that someone is alerted that the machine is locked down so that they can do analysis. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, false positives exist. You know, they're out there. I've seen major systems get shut down as a result of a false positive and result in hundreds of thousands of dollars of loss of business. So again, that can have a kind of echo effect as well. You just, again, don't remove that human element. As Sean is saying, have something come in, notice that that's happening, maybe lock it down, but get someone on that as soon as possible.
Yeah, there's not to jump too far from this report to another report, but the Verizon data breach report that came out several months back talked about, you know, the cost as they saw the average cost to recover from a ransomware event. And I believe, I'm paraphrasing, was $4.6 million on average, $4.8 million on average. It was 4 point something. It was in the multi-millions of dollars on average. So thinking about, you know, the organizations that struggle to fund cybersecurity solutions, there's also that flip side of saying, hey, in the event something like this bad happens because the protections weren't in place, this is the average cost to get back up and running. All right.
Yeah, and most organizations can't withstand that attack and keep their doors open. It's statistically not in their favor.
Yeah, and so back to the report here. The direct monetary loss of these internet crimes are in the billions. The indirect costs, like loss of productivity, damages to brand reputation, and strengthening IT infrastructure are much higher.
Yep.
To counter this growing threat, the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, the IC3, is investing in raising public awareness. They're extensively promoting cyber hygiene practices amongst businesses, like regular data backups, software upgrades, employee training, and using multi-factor authentication. Garrett, thoughts on
this? I'll tell you, learning from my mistakes, in addition to regular backups, validate that the recovery process works also.
That whole, you know, people ask for what's your business continuity and disaster recovery story. You know, one of those things that are usually written in there talks about backups, and then there's another line usually after that which talks about testing your backups to make sure that, what if I pull the plug in the system? Can I actually restore from backup? Because a lot of us who have found out the hard way, you go to restore from backup, and guess what? Those backups weren't actually saved properly. They're corrupted, or they weren't saved properly, or they didn't save enough data, so you can't really restore. I've seen this where, you know, folks say, no, we've got a backup solution. I say, what are you backing up? And then when they finally look at it, they say, oh, we're backing up desktops. Oh, there's a thumbs up there. I love that Mac camera. Desktops, downloads, and documents. I'm like, okay, so you're backing up like the key directory files. Cool, cool, cool. How about Azure? How about SharePoint? How about OneDrive? How about AWS? You know, because what they're saying is, you know, the nice backup tool, you know, that's built onto their desktops, right? So, you know, the help desk can transfer someone to a new laptop when they buy a new laptop. But I'm, you know, what about your financial processing system? How's that being backed up? And when was the last time you tested that? When was the last time you tested your HRIS and said, hey, someone blew away my entire HR database. How do I recover from that?
That's right. And for folks that have a lot of their critical infrastructure in SaaS apps, all the instrumentation and extensibility that you built on top of those SaaS apps as part of your infrastructure, that also needs to be backed up in some way, shape, or form as well, because the cost of recreating that is likely where a lot of that, you know, 4.923456 million came from.
Yeah, it's just interesting seeing these other, you know, the other things that are in here. Software upgrades. I mean, it's such an easy one to say, like, it's built into all of our desktops now, you know, update regularly. Chrome now, you know, has a little box every week that says, you know, finish to update, or, you know, click here to finish the update. But at the same time, you just walk around the user community, not us cyber nerds, and everybody's screen still has that little button that says, don't forget to update. Don't forget to click here to refresh Chrome to update. So
I mean,
you know,
I'd
forcing
say it's much worse than that.
Tell me what you got.
I was going to say, sorry to interrupt, but like just getting upgrades and updates rolled out, you know, through an environment. I mean, that in and of itself is its own very difficult process. And a lot of times, I know you have experience with this, you have to make concessions on, well, what can we update now?
Yeah. You know, it's not uncommon. You'll do I've seen like an audit, and to come to find out, like, hey, we got an environment that uses lots of Windows and lots of Mac OS. And then the audit comes to find out, like, we have many, many systems that are three, not .1, .2, .3 versions back, but like, you know, back at version 14, and we're currently on version 16, like major versions back. And, you know, very easy upgrade process. The ability to update software these days, unless you're talking about Oracle. Oracle's never easy, no matter what. But most things are pretty easy. Click a button, hit the update button, let the system, let the app reboot, call it a day. And of course, we still have a long ways to go there, but it has become a lot easier.
That's a snowball effect too. You know, I've heard time and time again during audits, oh, we have to keep this system at this version because it runs another software that doesn't support the new version of the operating system or whatever. And it's like, well, that's still on you because you've chose to stay stagnant and not evolve. Yeah. So that can be its own business problem that, again, security, we have some influence into, but oftentimes it just comes down to dollars and cents.
Yeah. I mean, the multi-factor authentication, we know we can do a lot of it for free. Again, if we got a small organization, you know, go grab Google Authenticator, find the way to scan a QR right. code and get it in there. You know, for a more robust organization that's trying to get a little bit more mature, if you're using Entra ID, you know, Microsoft 365, if you're using Okta, you've got the tools built right in there. You know, start making requirements that your stuff is brought into that system for not only MFA, but single sign-on. That way you make the usability a little bit easier. I've seen this time and time again where folks can pass an audit. Folks can tell you that, you know, we've got MFA on all the things and, you know, through our single sign-on. And then I will just, you know, poke a little bit and say, cool, let's go see how, you know, your HR system is working. Or let's go see, like, you know, the system that people are using to write or cash checks. Let me show that. Right. And it's a bank account. It's literally right. like a direct login to a bank. First name, right. you know, a username and password. And that's it. So, you know, folks are saying that we've got MFA, don't just think it's your Microsoft accounts. Don't think it's just your Okta accounts. Make sure you check all the places, because those are the places where folks are going to try to come in and do bad things. You know, your content management system, is there MFA on that? You know, have you rolled that into your single sign-on platform? So,
I mean, HR is a very weak point in an organization's attack surface. I've heard a lot of times that, you know, phishing simulation, security awareness originates from HR, and the HR team has been excluded from that training and awareness. And it's like, but wait, you're a really viable part of this whole area. So again, you know, make sure that everyone's covered, to your point, Sean. Yeah. Test everything. Don't leave any stone unturned.
Yeah, it's not uncommon that, you know, the HR system, which by, you know, the cool kids acronym is the HRIS, oftentimes like that HR system has its own like pseudo IT team mm-hmm. and they're off doing their own thing and not necessarily paying attention to the other rules or policies or standards. So yeah,
that's right.
Good point. All right, let's wrap up this report here. The last section of the summary says, it's clear from the 2023 report that cybercrime is an escalating problem and businesses, regardless of size, must invest in robust cybersecurity measures, regular employee training, and incident response plans to combat this threat. There we go. We've wrapped up the summary there. And you know, Garrett said this earlier, there's a whole lot of no surprise in this report.
Yeah.
Glad it exists. Glad that, you know, our folks in the FBI are paying attention to it. But here we are. You know, I feel like this is the report that, you know, I read last year and the year before.
And, you know, referencing the Verizon Deeper, that can be kind of a daunting report if you look at it. But just if folks don't know, there's always an executive summary that's written up by Verizon themselves that does go through a lot of the points in the Deeper, the data breach investigation report, that it's been very helpful for me in the past.
Yeah, maybe next year we'll bring up the Verizon DBIR. We'll give that a shot.
Awesome.
All right, that's our hot topic for the week. We're going to move on to our next section in the rundown here, war stories. Garrett, do you want to get us started on a war story you might have for us this week?
Yeah, I've got a pretty quick one. I worked in an environment where we had a very, very locked down remote desktop policy. You know, 3389 was just categorically blocked on all the perimeter. And this was back when, you know, there's a perimeter in play.
Where if you secured the perimeter, you're secure.
That's right.
There were those days. Was those days existed.
Well aware. Those days did exist.
Palo Alto made a lot of money by saying those words.
Man, we in security sure thought that we had it under control too, because we did, sort of. But my story comes from a very locked down environment where RDP was completely verboten. You know, if you said the word RDP, like a laser would come out of the ceiling and zap you. Not really. but... put a pin in that in a sec. In my EDR, I started getting alerts for these kind of rando boxes getting owned around the environment. I just couldn't really tie any correlation as to what, you know, was the same about these. It just happened to originate in different departments, different technology, different types of data that was on these systems, different groups of people. I mean, again, that's part of our job, is to try to understand, you know, how do these instances relate. But I just kept getting popped on these boxes, and I couldn't really figure it out until, and I will not dime out the technology, but I found a very specific word that ended up being a vendor name being reported in all these EDR reports, and I could not figure out what it is. It seemed like a foreign word, or maybe like a slur or something like that. I couldn't really figure it out. And come to find out, this was a web service that a member of one of the organizations had been using to expose remote access to folks that they wanted to show off functionality to. This was a remote access tool that operated over HTTP. I did not know about it, and I would have never have known about it because, again, it's just mixed with all the other web traffic out there that was absolutely getting us owned. And until I knew that this application existed and what it was, I then had to spend, I don't know, days, if not weeks, trying to figure out who all had this blasting. I mean, much to our point earlier about communicating out to our users, blasting out messages going, who is this? Who is using this? Please stop. And again, exercising futility. This was a months long thing that transpired. And so the point is, I would never have known about this if I had not just kind of stumbled upon it in an EDR report, because again, it just kind of flew way under the radar and brings me to my point of understand not only what kind of technology is in your environment, but talk to your people and tell them, hey, listen, RDP is verboten. What that also means is any type of remote access is not allowed, but then go the extra mile and provide them with a more viable solution.
Gosh, you
It's
just
like when I was
you.
in college working in IT, we had a big problem with file share access. People were storing, I mean, I'm super old, so storing music and video and file shares, and we couldn't thwart that. Only until we provided a better, more secure file system that allowed us to analyze some of the contents in there, make sure there wasn't anything totally illegal, did we actually start to see a reduction in that activity. So point being, don't block your users from using remote access. Don't just say that. Say, hey, here's what we're blocking. Here's what that means. Here's why, because here's the effect to you as an employee. And then here's a better way to do this if you absolutely have to have this functionality. And in this case, it was setting up like Bastion hosts within our cloud infrastructure to allow this very controlled access into these very specific systems, which might have taken an extra 5 minutes to set up, but in the long run ended up saving a ton of time. But yeah, point is I got completely caught off guard. I had no idea what this was. And in my opinion, I think I got lucky just finding it.
It was nice. You said you weren't going to dime. You're so good at this, not diming out the products or the vendors. I almost just started like blurting out names just a second ago. I'm like, oh no, don't do
Oh,
that, don't do
yeah,
that.
no,
Do that.
you
I'm
know
so good
this
at that.
story.
I'm so good at like I know one. Oh, anyways, I have a quick war story for the week. And this one goes back a few years because you'll hear the technology that I'm about to mention. My war story is titled Two Blackberries, One Adversary. And
Bez, my old friend.
so there was a time in my life where my entire day job and night hobby was all around the world of mobile. Palm OS, BlackBerry OS, iOS, this up and coming Android OS, right? This was and I would spend my time decompiling the operating systems. I would spend my time kind of reverse engineering the software on these systems. I, wrote courses on Android forensics and kind of tore around the US teaching these classes. I was a nerd. I loved this stuff. And it was a
You're
whole
still a nerd.
it was a lot of fun. I am still a nerd. It was a lot of fun for me. And I think about one of the early projects that came my way as I was building this new capability, and I was working at this really great company that basically said, if you can come up with a cool thing that you could find some, that there might be some value to our customer base, then we're going to give you the okay to do it. Very, very kind of cool, open place to work for. It's like, great, I want to get into mobile security stuff. And it kind of took me down a lot of different avenues. So then I kept trying to find, okay, well, where can I actually find work in this space with this new capability that I was learning? And one person said, I've got a thing for you. And this is where like the topic gets a little bit squirrely and a little bit bizarre, and I'm gonna leave a lot of unspoken things. But picture the story of being told, "Here's two blackberries." Okay, all right. I love blackberries. With the nice the, back when we had real buttons on a phone. Oh, I love
Beautiful,
those days. Here's two blackberries. I think they were the exact same model number. I was like, okay, all right. Here's two blackberries. Can you find the software on? Can you f tell which one has the software on it? I'm like, what? I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
What are we talking about here?
Can you find which one has the, you know, the software on? I'm like, what software? And they're like, you tell me. And that was one of those games. And so that's why I said two Black Raiders, one adversary. I actually don't know if I was the adversary or if somebody else was the adversary. But I was like, okay, well, let me go, you know, mess around with my new tools that I learned. So BlackBerry was written in, I believe, the C programming language. And so, you know, I was not necessarily a C expert, but rolling up my sleeves, bringing up my C decompiling tools and figuring out how to get into the file system. And in the end, if I think about the end of this story without being able to go through all of the middle of it, but the end of the story was me saying, hey, this one over here, this BlackBerry over here, like, it's got a directory that I don't think the directory wants me to see it. It's listed as hidden, but of course, thanks to my tools, I can see that there's a hidden directory. And they're like, thank you very much, project's over.
Found the thing. Thanks, goodbye.
War stories. War stories. Oh, BlackBerry, rest in peace. Sorry, I'm sorry. BlackBerry's alive and well. I'm sorry. They're a security product company now. I forgot all about that.
BlackBerry's dead to me. I ran the BlackBerry Enterprise system and it was just horrible. Oh,
the BES.
I mean,
BES.
BES, yeah. Being a user of the BlackBerry, I mean, I still have muscle memory. Like, you know, it's great. Fantastic tool. As far as being on the other side, I think that's now detailed in the Geneva Convention as a form of torture, as admitting BES.
All right, there's our war stories for the week. Thanks, Garrett. Let's be humans for a minute. Let's be humans. So this is the section where I feel like we can talk about whatever we feel like talking about in life. Both Garrett and I are musicians when we're not in the cyberspace. We're also lovers of music, and we're also in lots of spaces of technology that may be outside of cybers. So, Garrett, you got anything from our human category for this week?
Well, the weather's, you know, getting nice here in Nowheresville.
I'm jealous.
And as I know, it's not terrible like it up is in the redacted coast where you're at. So I started riding my bike again outside, here in the town that I live in. We have a little social ride that happens every Thursday, and I get together with 200 or 300 of my closest friends, and we just kind of do kind of a critical mass type bike ride throughout town. Last night tried to do it. There was not the meetup. I think it might've been canceled due to the, it being a better Friday than normal. But I did get to hook up with a bunch of my friends and got to ride around for the first time in a long time, which if you haven't done that, just getting on your bike and riding, it's very freeing. Sean and I talked about this earlier. It takes all of your concerns and just kind of lets them melt away because you're now concerned with not dying on a bike. So it's very freeing. Nice. I really enjoyed that. So that's my my being human update is find a way to be active. Nice. Because it's very good for the mind and the body.
That's awesome. I guess I have a human update, and it aligns with me talking about the weather, right? At the moment, right, lots of raining. I have a yard that has been historically great. You know, the ground takes the rain and the water goes into the ground, and you know, grass grows
as it
and
should,
you know, right? As it should, right? Over the last year, we did some work on the yard, and for whatever reason, the yard floods in every possible corner it can find right now. Like, things pool, things flood. I put on boots and walk around the yard, and like, I sink. Last week, I sunk down 13 inches of like quicksand mud in my backyard. Climate change? What? No.
What's the solution to that? Like a French drain or something?
So yes, I'm at the moment spending my life savings and all of my retirement funds on putting pipes in the ground.
Oh,
all around the property to keep the yard and the house from flooding. So I've got some landscape friends who are helping out, bringing in very cool tractors and backhoes and digging stuff up and burying pipes and
very expensive looking equipment, I'm sure.
Yeah. And you know, in the end, the goal is for water to go into the ground and, you know, we walk on it and there's grass and, you know, life.
Anyways, nature, get your stuff together. Come on.
That's me being a human right now. On another side, because I did mention music. There's a band this band is enormous. The band's called 21 Pilots. They're huge, right? They are an enormous band, yet I cannot find another human on this planet who likes the band like I do. I swear I'm the only one. And it's very strange because they're huge. They sell millions. They sell out tours globally. Anyways, they're releasing new one. They're releasing new music. They released a single 2 weeks ago with a video. They released another single this week with a video. So I'm all excited about their new music. They've got an album coming out in May. They just announced a tour coming up. So the music nerd in me is very excited about this, and I'm trying to find some friends who might want to go to the show with me.
They're actually a very cool band. It's just, you know, if anyone knows Sean and I, anything that Sean starts to admit that he's like not amazing at, I'm just going to glom on and attack that. 21 Pilots is actually a very cool group. Sean, you turned me on to the whole, like, they've got this, you know, mythos throughout their a bunch of codes, which obviously I'm very into. So actually it's a really cool group.
They have
so,
a deep
but I will
lore.
Continue to give you grief.
So of their last three albums and their upcoming album, they have this lore built into the album, into the albums that just goes deep. There's this underlying lore, and that's also very cool. And that was actually not the reason I got into them. It's just like, oh, here's an extra set of Easter eggs. So anyways.
Oh, that is cool.
All right.
That's cool.
We're humans. Garrett, tell us a little bit about the job market before we wrap things up today.
I mean, we kind of hinted at this earlier. I see on LinkedIn, people are just clamoring for people to join the security teams. Like, there's not enough talent to fill those seats yet. And I'm not calling foul, like this is made up, but yet we also hear that the job market in tech is very difficult. I would wager that it's probably a job market in tech that's difficult are the non-operational roles around the technology, marketing, sales, things of that nature. Those may be saturated, but the actual jobs in operational security specifically, I see tons of my friends hiring all the time, and not just for, you know, very high end jobs. I mean, there are entry level jobs, there are junior jobs out there. So if you are an operational security professional, you're struggling to find a job. I mean, again, I don't know what to tell you. There are tons of jobs out there. And to that end, I think we might have spoken about this last time, but if you are in the job market and you want some help, Sean and I will review your resume on the show. We will anonymize it. We won't call you out and say, oh, look at Billy's resume here. I mean, we may be critical and we may give you some feedback that it's not like, you know, the most amazing news ever, but it'll be all anonymous. It'll be to further your penetration into the job market. Because again, I see a ton of jobs out there. As far as just like a quick advice, one thing that I would mention is, you know, do a cover letter. I know a lot of people say, don't do a cover letter, do a cover letter. When I hire, I love reading a cover letter and express in that cover letter, what problems you're poised to solve. Don't just say, hey, I'm Garrett. I'm really excited to be a part of your company because you got a great mascot. My favorite color is blue. You know, focus in on, hey, I understand, you know, this is where you're going with your product offering, or this is what your company is struggling with. Looks like you guys just acquired 20 other companies. I can help with that. And provide, it doesn't have to be the right answer for every problem, but just put on paper that you're thinking about the problems and how to solve for them. I believe that's what most folks that are hiring in these types of roles are looking for, is someone who can demonstrate the ability to solve problems, that they're aware of the problems that are out there, and at least a willingness to kind of chew through that.
I think it's really interesting. It's so great to hear your thoughts on that, because you are looking at resumes, and you know, you've been a hiring manager, and so you know what you're looking for. I think on the flip side, thinking of some challenges out there, I'm seeing experienced folks finding sometimes having a more difficult time finding jobs. In the last year, I'd say with the 2022 and 2023 job cuts that have existed in many places, I'm seeing some folks taking longer to find jobs than they would have expected. And I think of a couple things. Okay, if I'm hearing from experienced folks who are impacted, things that would come to mind for me that I've had conversations around, you know, if you're an experienced person and your resume shows that you are very experienced, a couple things that you might want to think about, which kind of like helps you look maybe younger, helps you may look a little fresher. For example, take off those early jobs. Take off the jobs on your resume that were, you're right out of college or right out of high school, or, you know, your early getting started jobs. They are cool stories, but in some cases, if you are very experienced, they may actually lead to age bias, right? Ageism may come into play. The age bias is a reality. We all know it. People don't want to talk about it, but it's a real thing. So can I make myself look fresher and younger? Maybe take a couple of those early jobs off. Maybe take off the year you graduated or got your last degree. So if you have your college listed on your resume, And you just take that year off, because having that year of when you graduated, that tells people lots of things. And that tells folks how far along you are in your career. That gives people thought of how expensive you might be to hire. And it also lets people think of, like, you know, maybe how stale you are, whether you are or aren't. Those
how
biases,
set in your ways
those
you might
biases
be.
Come into play and yeah. make people think of, like, ooh, how close this person might be towards end of career or major career change, like things along those lines. So if you just take that date off, it eliminates those bias thoughts right away.
Which, to be clear, the age bias is total crap. Like I don't agree with it. I don't think it's a great approach. I 100% try to be unbiased in any kind of hiring decisions I make. But as Sean is saying, it exists. It happens. It creeps into people's, you know, decision-making skills. So again, I don't see this as surreptitious. I see this as just, again, removing the potential for this type of bias to arise.
Yeah. For anyone who's interested in us looking at their resume, we'll clean it. We'll take your name off of it. We'll remove all of your personal info. You can reach out to us at any of our socials. I'll mention our socials at the end of the show. You can also email me directly, Sean@cybersecuritygrowth.com, and reach out to me there. So any way you feel like reaching out to me, we can get connected, and we would love to take a peek at your resume and bring some feedback and thoughts to you from the Peanut Gallery. That is me and Garrett. So
that's right.
There we go. All right, that's a job market. We are now wrapping things up. What a show, Garrett.
What a show.
This is it's our third week, but our second show, right? We're doing a show every other week, so this is fantastic. I want to thank you all for listening and or watching. My name is Sean Valley. I'm the creator of the show and the music here on Cybersecurity Growth. You can find us at cybersecuritygrowth.com or our blog, cybersecuritygrowth.com/blog, which is where we post all of our shows. You can find me on my socials, most any social network under @SeanValley or @cybersecuritygrowth, and you're more than welcome to send me a message there if you want us to take a peek at your resume. If you like the show, please tell all of your friends. If you hate it, please tell all of your adversaries. Please like our shows. Please subscribe. Please follow. Leave a 5-star review. Something like, "This was a great show. I learned something new to help me in my cybersecurity career." Garrett, do you want to give a little plug for yourself and where folks can find you?
Well, yes, I'm available on LinkedIn. That's about the only social media that I maintain. So, you know, catch me at your local convenience store, maybe like a Kroger, not in the Austin area, because, of course, those are leaving. But, yeah, I'm around.
Usually I've seen Garrett lingering around the 7-Elevens, around the little roller wheels.
That's right.
You know,
right.
Trying to...
Oh, the Slurpee machines? Yes. Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah.
That's usually where Garrett
catch me
can,
there on
can
July
be mostly found. Yep.
That's right.
That's right. All right, so this week we covered the FBI 2023 Internet Crime Report. You can find us on Twitch every other week, Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and 6:30 p.m. GMT. And we're in your pod feeds a few days later.
Yep.
I want to thank you all for joining, and we will see you next time on Cybersecurity Growth. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Thanks.